The conversations that he was having were amazing. So half the time I talked to him about him getting on the float. So I kind of am curious if he got on the float, but I didn't follow up with him later, so I don't know.
Of complete technology screw-ups for all three of us, as far as I can tell. This is Bad Voltage, Series 2, Episode 36. Welcome to the show.
I'm amazed that we've got to Season 2, Episode 36, given the just pure level of technical incapability that we appear to have from time to time.
The short time period before we started recording was none of our finest moments, I will say.
No, it is not good. Don't hire any one of us.
So someone did a review of the show, and they were quite mean about it, but whatever. But they did say in it, and all three of them are experts in their fields. You sort of think, yeah, but if you'd seen the last half an hour of everyone fanning about with the video, maybe not.
I would argue that it's really Google and Shaw's fault. Nothing to do with us. We're as clear as the driven snow.
I'm prepared to support this theory.
So we're going to do one long show today, which is going to be just a load of news and stuff that's been going on. So should we just get into it, or do you want to do your little And Now Bad Voltage, Jeremy? Should we do that?
Let's get right into episode Jono Does Not Want to Do Any Audio Work.
That is not true. All right. If there's one segment, there's no point having the little bit of drums between the intro and the outro. It's pointless.
The only reason I listen to the show is for that little bit of drums, but sure, let's get into it.
You guys have become so Hollywood.
I see that green M&M. Get that thing out of here.
Why don't we start talking about a bit of news that no one's going to care about?
Sure.
Well, we're looking for advice, essentially, right? Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to go for it? Do you want to explain the situation?
So, back in 2012, those of you who have known Jono for a long time may be aware that he kind of goes, I've discovered this new hobby, and then it takes over his life for a bit. One of those things was barbecuing, smoking meat. And he and I sat down and he said, hey, there should be a place that I can like record these different cooks that I'm doing and so I can get better at it and so on and so forth. And that seemed like a really good idea. So we sat down and we built a site. I suppose these days you probably call it a social network or something, but basically a site where you could record the different barbecue and the different cooks, the different work that you were doing in as much or as little detail as you wanted. You could track temperatures, all this sort of thing, take pictures and upload them. And it gave you a permanent record of all of your cooks. And you could see other people's cooks, offer comments on them. You could see that people were spritzing with apple juice or what charcoal they were using.
That's your one piece of barbecue knowledge.
It's literally the only thing.
With apple juice.
Literally, don't look at me, Mal. I eat pizzas.
So we built. One thing to outline on that is one of the ways in which you learn how to barbecue, and people say it over and over again, is you have to write down your cooks. And our idea was, why would you write things down with a pencil? There's the internet and computers to do that. So we built BBQPad.
Exactly. So we built a thing called BBQPad, BBQPAD.com. And you could, the whole idea was you'd track all your cooks and upload them. So you'd take pictures of the meat at each hour or whatever. It would draw you graphs of the temperature as you tracked it, so on and so forth. And
yeah. Pretty cool.
It was really actually rather good. I was, we've gone back and looked at it recently for reasons we will discuss shortly. And I was surprised at how comprehensive it was, the quality of the whole thing. Especially since we did it, right? It's
you were surprised? I mean, I would argue that we are possibly the world's greatest developers.
50% of us, perhaps.
Hey, don't be mean on yourself.
No, I'm talking about Jono here. I mean, he was there.
Oh, okay.
Typing stuff into BBQPad with one hand, his other hand on his copy of PHP and MySQL for Beginners.
Well, that would be weird because it's written in Python.
Because it's Django, anyway, yes. So, we built BBQPad. We thought it was very cool. A few people used it and they seemed to really like it, but it never really went anywhere. So it kind of lay fallow for how long? 5 years, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Jeremy, stop typing. We can hear you. we can hear you. You're not paying attention.
The mic I'm recording on was muted, but good job there.
Yeah, well, we can hear you, okay? And I think that the listeners can hear you too. And if not, I'll overlay that in the edit.
Anyway, got his editing now. So we went back and looked at Barbecue Bad and thought, you know what? We should really shut this down. It's just sitting there, hardly anyone's using it. But equally, we don't want to just bin it, throw it all away.
Yeah.
So exactly. You take over the story from him.
So this is the situation. We built Barbecue Pad. I think it's actually a pretty decent application. It's and we want to open source it. So we want to put it out there. Ak and I haven't talked extensively about what we want to do here, but I think we have basically the same goals, which is we want to put it out there as an open source project that people can basically fork and build into something new. It needs a lot of work doing. It needs kind of bringing up to date. It's based upon versions of Django from many moons ago. And we're quite happy with people to go and make a commercial service around this, but we always want to make sure that the foundation of the code base is open, right? We don't want someone to be just take the code and build something that they sell and then, you know, not give anything back. So we were discussing what is the right kind of license that we should be using. And my initial inclination here is the Apache license, because it seems to be a popular choice in terms of you can build free and non-free bits that are kind of mixed together. It's been reasonably well adopted by the business world. So people could, you know, set up a business around Barbecue Pad if they wanted to. I mean, whatever, they'd call it something new, probably. But, you know, there could be the GPL or there could be the AGPL. So, you know,
right.
So that's kind of what I wanted to check in on.
Yeah, so this is kind of the thought process here. We actually tried to make a commercial success of it. You know, you could sign up and you could you could pay a bit of money and not get the ads and that sort of thing. Someone else wants to take it and build a barbecue community around it, then okay, cool. But since we did the bulk of the work, I would like the code to remain open source. I don't want someone to take it, close it, make sure all their enhancements to it are closed and not available to the community, and then make a commercial success out of it, because I'd be really annoyed by that.
So given your requirements, you basically have one choice. And let me preface this with, I am not a lawyer. I do not play one on TV. I have started multiple open source programs offices, though, so I do have opinions on licenses. There is no correct license. There's a correct license for each individual choice. And, you know, they're all have their pros and their cons. Given what the Apache 2 license is, and it's a great license, I always explain it as the one open source license that I think is clearly written for lawyers by lawyers, which makes lawyers comfortable. But if you don't want people to be able to close it, then obviously Apache 2 is a pretty poor choice, I think.
Right, that's my worry.
This was my as I understand it, given that we don't want people to be able to take this, basically take the code as it stands from us, and then just do loads of stuff to it and not release that. If we want them to release that code, AGPL is the only thing on the table, right?
Yes. Now, don't forget, the AGPL comes with quite a few, I don't know whether I would call them caveats, or it comes with some baggage in that a large swath of companies will not allow their employees to commit to AGPL-licensed projects in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, is the downside there. My assumption is, if we push a thing which says this will remain open forever, then no company is going to take this and attempt to make a commercial product out of it. They're only going to do that if they can close it off. So if Barbecue Pad rises from the ashes, it will be as a community-run, community-operated project, which we're okay with, right?
Yeah. I think that would be
my broader question here. Licensing aside, and we'll get back to licensing in a second, because I think this is an interesting conversation. Choosing licenses to me is interesting. Why do you think it was not a success?
I have an answer for that. At least from my own perspective, I think it was a success in the sense of, like, I think people who used it found it useful, and people cooked a lot with it and all the rest of it. I think Ak and I both just kind of lost interest in it. And so it hasn't had any attention in years, and it hasn't grown very much. So it had, you know, 400 or 500 users who seemed to use it. to varying degrees. You know, it was, when we say, well, like, we tried to make a commercial success, we kind of, not really. I mean, we rigged it up in such a way that there was ways to make money on it. Like, so without going into too much detail, you know, it's pretty extensively designed. So, you know, each of the different components in a cook, whether it's the cooker or whether it's the charcoal that you use, each has its own kind of page. And then potentially you could have companies, you know, advertising or sponsoring on those different pages. So Kingston, you know, charcoal could potentially look at how many people are using their charcoal and then advertise on other charcoal pages or whatever else. We just didn't really particularly pursue it. I'm actually fairly confident that you could build a business around this. And I actually don't mind. I'm okay with someone building a business around this. I just want to make sure that ideally, in the similar way that Matomos do it, you know, they're basically open core. And I'm okay with open core. So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of
I would think, to add to that, certainly back then, and from my perspective, at least now, although possibly not Jono's, we had this thing, but we didn't really know how to put it in front of people who would like it.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
I mean, which was part of the thing. Certainly people, a lot of people who used it liked it, but not that many people used it. I think if you'd got every barbecue person on earth to try it, we'd have had 500,000 users. Ta-da, done. We didn't do that because certainly back then in 2012, 2013, I didn't know how to do that. To some extent, at least, I still don't know. Jono, you've got a lot better at this sort of thing in the last 6 or 7 years, but I think back then you probably agree that we didn't know either.
Is there another competitor that has arisen or even an orthogonal competitor?
I've not seen a single service that does this.
And it seems like a valuable, useful service to me. I'm a bit more hardcore about this than Jono, but basically out of a sense of resentment. We built this thing, didn't make a success of it. If someone just takes it, goes, okay, bundles it up with a new logo, and then suddenly gets $60 million in venture funding, I should be really cross.
So let me ask you a question, though. If they did, is your implementation so unique that, given the idea, they couldn't have re-implemented it with minimal ease?
No. If someone wanted to do this, then okay. And, you know, if you are currently head of interesting technology for Weber and you want to write us a check for it, then we'll listen.
The one thing I would say, the code is kind of like vaguely knocked together.
Yeah, it's not the most complicated thing to build, but it is quite intricate.
Right. But I do think, like, a lot of work, the one thing that Mr. Langridge and I have done a few times now is, you know, spent a lot of time designing and building something and coming up with, like, really a fundamentally new design. I'd say the two projects that we've done this in particular, a barbecue pad and Jacosha.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'm proud about with both of those projects, even though they're not really existing anymore, is I do think the design stands the test of time. So I think barbecue pad is well designed. I think it's well structured. The tricky thing with the barbecue world is that it's not a particularly tech savvy market, right? A lot of people are older, and barbecue is about analog. It's about fire. It's about being outside. It's not about being sat in front of computers. Now, I think that is changing more and more. You're finding cookers with Wi-Fi built in where they can automatically, you know, transmit the temperature to your phone and things like that. I think it is changing, but even that kind of stuff hasn't really caught on. So I think that's the tricky thing, is something like barbecue pad needs someone who can market to that world. I did a little bit of it. I went on some podcasts. I promoted it. It got put into the sidebar on the barbecue subreddit and all that kind of stuff, but not really much further than that. So
I could imagine someone like Kingston or Weber or some kind of big barbecue manufacturer who sells things like IoT thermometers, totally building that in and saying, hey, look, this uploads directly to here, just press the button,
right,
as part of a larger offering. I can completely see that.
Yeah. So, you know, the big question is, like, this is why the licensing is so difficult. I mean, I think you and I don't really necessarily 100% agree on the commercialization of it. I'm okay if someone takes it, because I think they'd have to rewrite a chunk of it anyway. But you know, you wrote a chunk of this and we have to find something that we're both happy with.
That's the thing. I mean, I don't want to be too fundamentalist about it equally because you've got a reasonable point as well. So I'm not going to be, you know, flying the flag for
right.
you. It must absolutely be
important to you.
But yeah, you know, so...
We're open source people as well.
Yeah, so. You know, I mean, that was interesting. When we said, okay, we should close this down. And obviously, we want to we need to gather all the data and send it to the people who are there so they don't lose any of the data, any of the cooks they uploaded and so on. But then the first thing Jono said was, okay, we should open source it. And I thought, right. yeah, we should. I was just going to kind of close it down. I hadn't even thought about it. It hadn't even occurred to me to say, we should release the code so someone else can do something with this. And right. Jono said, first thing, yeah, we should open source it. And I thought, yeah, we should. That's a really good idea. Because, yeah, we're open source people.
I was going to say, everyone complains why when companies end the life of product, why they don't open source it. You two didn't even think to do it. So imagine how, a company just, I'll think a lot of times, yeah. probably legitimately doesn't cross their mind.
Right.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm kind of swinging a little bit more towards the AGPL because what's more important to me is that I'd be happy to give the domain away. If there was someone was to come up to us and say, we want to take this over and make this into a community, a real community for barbecue cooks, people who will maintain the code, keep it up to date, you know, set up communication channels and Slack and all the stuff that you expect in the community, but focused on barbecue, I would be more than happy to not just, you know, I mean, obviously they can take the code and they can fork it, whatever. But, you know, to have the domain and whatever else.
No reason why they can't continue being barbecue
but
pad, yeah.
I would want them to prove that they're doing that first, though,
it's
before
a good
we
name.
Give them the domain. So,
anyway. It is a good name. We spent ages doing the name.
And the logo was such a professional job.
might want to rebrand it a touch, new people.
And there's one T-shirt that exists as well.
There is. Blimey, I'd forgotten about the T-shirt.
I found it yesterday. So I'd love to hear some feedback from the community on this. This is such a great, I mean, you know, first of all, what do you think we should do in terms of the licensing? We want to make this decision quickly, so let us know fairly soon. And then secondly, if you are interested in barbecue, if you're interested in setting up a community around this, let us know as well. So
go to community.badvoltage.org or we've got a Slack channel, ping us on Twitter and let us know what you think.
Should we do some news?
Let's.
All right. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Jeremy, because one of the big pieces of news that I think would be useful to talk about is Pat.
Oh, why don't
Pat
we start
Volkadin.
With the Slack world?
Oh.
Sure.
Oh, go on.
So
explain.
Patrick recently posted. I should kind of as a disclaimer. LQ is the official forum for Slackware, so it was posted to LQ. But he's basically said that, and I would encourage you to go read his post because there's a little bit of nuance there, and this is kind of
hang on. Explain for people who don't know Slackware very well who Patrick is.
Okay, but like I was gonna, the caveat I was gonna give here is I don't want to give too much detail because I think it's a little bit nuanced and this is kind of his story
right.
to tell and I don't want to color it with my personal
yeah.
Opinion of some of the facts. But so Slackware is one of the longer running distributions. I think along with Debian are the two that have been around for a very, very, very long time. It's also like Debian, not very commercialized. It's basically just Patrick Volkerding, who is the person that started it, is still just the lone person that is maintaining it. And he actually moved out to Walnut Creek years back to try to kind of commercialize it. Didn't really succeed, and now he moved back home to Minnesota. So was a neighbor for to Bacon a little while there, but
Walnut Creek Software,
exactly.
Oh, Walnut Creek CD-ROM.
Walnut Creek CD-ROM, yeah,
exactly. But so he posted recently that. A lot of the fundraising that he was doing was ostensibly being done through store.slackware.com, which it turns out he wasn't receiving the money that they said, and the deal kind of got changed behind his back in a way. I guess the ownership behind the scenes had changed, and he wasn't getting the donations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was some kind of money issues that he has been going through, and I actually just got off a call with him right before this, and I am kind of happy to report that we're going to fix a lot of this moving forward, and we should have some things to announce, unfortunately, not yet today, but very soon, to fix some of this. But I thought we've kind of talked about open source and making money in the past, and I thought this was an interesting kind of concrete use case for this. So one thing that came up was, should he continue the store on his own, or should he not continue the store on his own? Should he use something like Patreon? Should he use something like Open Collective? He's given out a PayPal address, and he said people have actually started sending money to that, which is great, but is that really the right way to do it? And someone in, I think it was actually on Reddit, posted a Bitcoin address saying that it was his, and it turns out it's verifiably not his. So I think I'm pleasantly surprised, and I know, Stuart, you had mentioned this earlier, that surprised how many people have said they're interested in helping support this, which I think is great.
Yeah.
But I think doing so in a sustainable path forward is important. So curious what your opinions are on the situation, but on kind of what you think are interesting, reasonable, sustainable paths forward.
Honestly, I'm not as surprised how many people have stepped up and said, now, okay, we're going to help. I'm surprised how much money there was there to begin with. I mean, reading through Volkerding's post, and, you know, I can't verify any of this, but he was talking about how he was expecting money from the store to the tune of sort of $100,000 or something. And I thought, the Slackware community is that big? I thought it was, you know, nine people collected on Linux questions.
$100,000 for what period of time?
I don't know, right?
Oh, okay.
But equally, I haven't run any projects which have accumulated $100,000 unless you let them run till the heat death of the universe. So he's doing okay. I don't think it's the last 25 years of Slackware t-shirt sales or anything. So I don't know. But I thought, wow, obviously that community's bigger than I thought it was. And then looking at, he posted on Linux questions, and the thread has now got 500 and something comments in it, 530 odd, I think, when I was looking earlier. And a good proportion of those people saying, wow, didn't realize. I'm happy to contribute more. I'm happy to contribute in some kind of sustainable way, something like Patreon or whatever. Let us know how it can happen. And we've talked in the past about the, you know, the 1,000 true users, 1,000 true fans thing. Where if you've got 1,000 true fans of your product and they'll buy basically everything you put out, that's a sustainable community which can support you to do it. And Slackware, it sounds like, completely has that, which I have to say I was faintly surprised at. The last time I was told Slackware was on floppy disks, it shows you how long ago it was.
Right. Yeah. Now, I mean, I think this is going to be... This is tricky, I think, because, I mean... Patreon is becoming, I think, an increasing solution for these kinds of things.
Yep.
You know, we know various people who are various people and projects who are running Patreon accounts, and it does seem to work, I think, reasonably well for certain people. The tricky thing, I think, with this is with something such as Slackware is, I mean, you know, he could arguably set up a Patreon for an individual, like for him. Right, but then is it just him? I mean, is it literally just him who's working on Slackware? I'm sure there's other people who are involved in some capacity. I'm sure it's not literally.
So there are a couple of volunteers around the periphery that have been with the project for a very, very long time, but the main project is predominantly him.
Yeah, and I know I always raise this when we talk about funding, but it reminds me of Paul. What's his name from Ardor?
The guy from Ardor, yeah.
Yeah, who, you know, does the majority of the work in Ardor, and the donations go, like, it's very explicit. It goes to him so he can work full time on Ardor. And that strikes me as the right kind of model for Patrick. Like, if he's going to be able to spend a significant amount of time on this, then having a Patreon where people can submit that is good. But the tricky thing with this, and I mean, Slackware 96 was my first distro. So it's got a bit of a special place in my heart. Patrick's a nice guy. I don't know him particularly well, but I know him. He's going to have to do more work to, like, Patreon accounts don't fill themselves with money. You've got to market it. You've got to focus on it. You've got to make it front and center for it to actually be sustainable. And that takes time and effort and work. And I don't know how much of that stuff he does, but that's something that he's very good at.
Do you think... certainly if you want to continue to grow your income, you do. But if he's got 500 people signed up now saying, I'll give you $5 a month and I'll do that indefinitely, then he's good, right? I mean, he probably go.
There are two flaws with your suggestion. One is just because people say they're going to give you money
doesn't mean
they're actually going to give you money.
In this case, secondly, I genuinely think they will.
I think 60% of those people will.
That's fair. Certainly not everybody, but yeah.
And secondly, no one gives money indefinitely.
Yes, I believe.
So you've always got to be. Yes. You've always got to be doing. And even if it's $5, like if he wants to go full time on this, I don't know where he lives. But if he wants to go full time on this, is in Minnesota. So he's going to have to bring in at least like $3,000 to $6,000 a month to be able to sustain this, depending on his financial situation, these debts and whatever else. I don't know what his financial situation is,
right.
But you know, it's a non insignificant amount of money, and I think he can do it. I mean, I think there's enough people around the world who care about Slackware to do it, but you've got to find those people and you've got to plug them in and you've got to convince them. And with something like Patreon, you've got to offer them something that's unique. Most people who pay for Patreon do it because they like the creator, but they also, they get unique access to material, whatever else. And I don't think Patrick's going to want to like monetize certain parts of Slackware. I think he's going to want Slackware to always be free.
Yes.
So what additional service would he provide to his patrons? All I'm saying is that promotion and that work is work. It takes time to do that.
I mean, I could see your point, but it kind of feels to me like he's got a pre-selected community who are interested in paying. The thing we've always said that people shouldn't rely on, which is people donating basically out of the goodness of their heart. The Slackware community maybe feels like an exception. Like, it's one of the few places where that will actually work.
But I think it's naive to think to depend on that. I think testing that hypothesis makes sense. But how long are those people going to do that?
Right.
That's fair. I mean, you might find this works for 12 to 18 months, then he starts to see numbers drop off. I mean, Metafilter, as an example, went through this. Did you see the Mephi stuff? When did you last look at Metafilter?
Basically never.
Yeah, they wrote a thing saying, hey, we've seen our stuff like the ad revenue and so on drop off and drop off and drop off to the point where it's now becoming a serious threat to the financial viability of the platform. So we've got various plans in place. What could we do? And one of the things that happened was a whole bunch of people went, oh, wow, I didn't realize that this was a big problem. I'm happy to take the donation that I'm doing and up it a little bit, or I'm happy to start donating when I wasn't, or I'm happy to donate in this different way because you get more of that money and so on. And again, that's a relatively small, relatively self-contained, relatively dedicated, long-standing community who are interested in seeing that community perpetuate itself. They're not particularly bothered about growing it or getting more people into it. They just want the thing that they have to keep going. And again, that seems like another example of something where if you say, okay, in order to do this, we've got to raise this much money, and people in it go, okay, I like this thing that I'm part of. I'm happy to pay a little bit of money to make sure that it happens. So Slackware, Metafilter, again, the same thing. This clearly doesn't work for a whole bunch of things. It doesn't work if you start up a new project. But if you've got people who stuck by you through thick and thin for the last 20 years, which both of those have.
Right. I think it only works in those kinds of cases, which are few and far between.
Yeah.
The thing that's going in Patrick's favor is, you know, he's a known quantity and his reputation is well earned, right?
Yep.
Like the three of us have got enormous respect for him, and rightly so. He's earned that respect. The tricky thing is I think it's a mistake to say, okay, we're going to identify our 500 people and we'll just depend that they'll always be able to support the project, because, you know, people, you know, the next time we have a financial crisis, the first thing that people are going to cut is those kinds of donations. You know, you've always got to be constantly growing and getting more and more people into that supporting mentality. I'm not necessarily suggesting that he has to set up like a huge marketing campaign and do all social media and all that kind of stuff, but you've always got to be hustling to get the donations in. Otherwise, the donations run out and then you're like, shit, where's my money? You know?
Right. I mean, that's why I kept mentioning the word sustainable is my assessment of the situation is that he doesn't want to do an NPR-style fundraising drive every year, because I don't think it's something that, A, he enjoys, or B, that he's particularly good at, right? He's good at putting together a distribution over decades and has proven that.
Yeah.
But the other stuff I think he just doesn't want to do. So Something that, whether that's a store or whether it's a mix of Patreon or Open Collective and a store and something else, I don't know. But I think...
Well, the other thing as well I would say, and I appreciate that this is a view that is by definition privileged. I don't mean from a wealth perspective, but this is only an option that's open to certain people. But one of the things I'm discovering more and more as I get older is there is lots of money out there that people can get, right? I mean, even back when we did Lug Radio, like, we were able to find sponsors for Lug Radio Live, no problem. We were able to find sponsors for the Community Leadership Summit, no problem. There's lots of money out there, and in many ways it could be easier, not necessarily to just go and find, like, it could be good, a good way of supplementing that income is to go and find some sponsors. I mean, there's companies, I don't want to say any names because I wouldn't want to put them into a position where they'd be pressured to do it, but there's so much goodwill in the open source world.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about people like Taurus Balog, right? Who runs OpenNMS. I'm not saying Taurus would support this, but Taurus has said repeatedly, I believe that I should give money to my friends to help them to do great things. And he sponsors so many different open source projects.
Yes.
I think there's loads of Tauruses out there who would potentially be happy to cut Patrick a check for 10 grand here and there, you know? So he doesn't necessarily have to then rely quite so much on those in-kind donations that he could maybe, if he can pull in 50 or 60 grand, you know, a year from those organizations, particularly people who are shipping Slackware, then that might help him out, you know? So
I can imagine wherever he comes up with will be a kind of patchwork of lots of different things.
Yeah. But yeah, he deserves it. He's a good guy and it's a good project. And I think for many of us, it really was our first foray into open source. So,
yes.
Well, Linux.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll
go on.
Yeah. Well, I was going to pivot a little bit to Cassidy.
Well, is exactly what I was just about to say. We're talking about money being out there. Here's an example. Speak on.
Yeah. So, some of you will be familiar with the Elementary project we've talked about previously. This is an open source desktop that's had a small group of ridiculously motivated and passionate people running this for quite some time now. I don't know how long Elementary's been about, but there's Dan Rabbit, who's kind of like head honcho, and there's a guy called Cassidy who has been involved in the project doing a bunch of UX stuff for quite some time. Cassidy, really nice guy, works at System76, who obviously produce Linux laptops, for those of you familiar with it. And he posted a blog entry, was it last week?
I think
it was.
Yeah.
Basically saying, you know, he's decided to go full time with Elementary. And I want to pull out the quote that really stood out to me. He said, "Thanks to the continued support from our community, as well as a large private contribution, I now have the opportunity to do all of this full-time as my career. I plan to continue to focus on the areas I've been working on as a volunteer, plus dedicate time to working with OEMs, which is original equipment manufacturers, for those of you unfamiliar with the lingo, app developers and other parties to help keep Elementary financially sustainable." So, what do you guys think about this? I have some thoughts on this, but I've been doing a lot of waffling. So, what do you think about this move?
If there's the money for it, it's what he wants to do. I've seen a whole bunch of people go, "Oh, but what if it only lasts a year or whatever?" I'm like, welcome to my world, dude. This is where freelancers live the whole time.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
even if this, you know, this, they've got a large contribution and they've got, and they're starting to move closer towards financial sustainability through income into the project. I mean, Dan is already working full time on it. Now Cassidy is as well. This is great, right? There's literally no downside to this. The worst thing that can happen is that the money runs out 12 months from now and then he goes and gets a job. He's no worse off than he is now.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah. What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I'm curious what you're waffling about.
No. I was just been doing a lot of talking. I mean, the thing that's interesting to me about this is... when I first read that, the first thing I actually thought was, what if the money runs out? And you raised a good point, Ag, about, you know, that's the life of a consultant or a freelancer. Yeah. Or, you know,
well, that's just the life of working at a tech startup, right? I mean, I would consider Elementary at this point, if they have two full-time employees, a startup. And that's startup life.
Yeah, it's true. And what happens if the startup runs out of money, right? Yeah. It's not just, it doesn't just affect
elementary. It's exactly the same thing. This is both you and I, right? You start working for someone, it goes well, you know, you've got a reasonably long-term contract, and then it stops, then you find something else to do. Maybe you go and get a job.
Yeah. The only thing that worries me about this, and, you know, I've said before, like, and I'll say it again, I love what the elementary team are doing. I think they're one of the most interesting projects in the Linux desktop world. And I love their focus on simplicity. I just think they're doing a really good job. The only thing that worries me is that we've discussed previously about their app developer platform. Mm-hmm. And that they raised, you know, what was it, $1,000 or $1,500 or something like that from a certain period of time. It's not gangbusters in terms of money.
Right.
And I'm guessing from Cassidy's post that this large private donation is going to be the majority of what's going to be covering his employment, which is fine. But what worries me a bit, and I say the same thing to, like, I've had two friends recently who've quit their jobs and gone to work at startups, and they've talked to me about, like, feedback on which startups they should be choosing. And the thing I would say to them is, you got to look at the financial sustainability of those companies. You don't want to be leaving, you know, in the next year or 2 years because they run out of money. You want to, if you're going to leave, you got to leave on your own terms. And what worries me a little bit is whether the startup elementary is financially sustainable to be able to employ them.
You see, now, to me, I just don't see that as big a problem as you do. So he leaves, he goes there. 18 months from now, elementary don't have the money to pay him. And then he goes, okay, that didn't work out. I'll go back to working on it in the evenings like I did before, and I'll go and get a job. Now, admittedly, it's easy to go, I'll go and get a job. But I don't think Cassidy will have a particular problem finding one.
Right.
Well, at least the thing that would make me worried about that is a couple of reasons. One is, you know, just kind of general quality of life and living. I'm guessing Cassidy is, I have no idea, but I'm guessing his salary at elementary is not going to be particularly high because, you know, they're a company that doesn't have a huge amount of money. I'm assuming he could earn a lot more going to work at a Google.
Well, maybe, but equally, he's choosing to work on stuff that he wants to do for less money, which is, you
and
know.
And aside from that, what he's trying to reasonable. Do is build a company. And it's, you know, yeah. like anything, it's yeah. kind of like an investment. It's an investment of your time
of course.
Into building a future yeah. that you think is going to be better.
Yeah, so, it's a start. I
mean, yeah, and of course, there are people who go to work for charitable organizations who take less money, but they're doing the right thing. All in favor of all of that kind of stuff. I'm just saying that it makes me a little nervous given the fact that elementary so far doesn't have a sustainable business model, whether that can continue. If he spends a year there, he does great stuff, moves the project forward, he has a good time, it's, you know, and then the money runs out and he has to go back to System 76 or he goes to work at Canonical or whatever, so be it. I'm just saying that I would like to preferably try and see the outcome where they do grow as a business. I just don't, to me, the thing, and we've said this before, I just think their business model is missing.
Well, right. I think part of it is if you don't have someone working on it full time to come up with the business model and to put that energy, it takes a lot of work to build a business, and doing it part time is really, really difficult. So the yeah. fact that they're dedicated yeah. enough to say, you know what, I am going to work full time and I'm going to take this chance. I mean, if you really want to succeed, yeah. I think those are the kinds of risks and sacrifices that have to happen.
And realistically, if we were to say, you know, if they came to Bad Voltage Consulting and said, okay, what can we do to make our thing sustainable? We'd list a bunch of stuff. But it's all the stuff that Cassidy himself listed in the bit you quoted, right? I'm going to dedicate time to working with OEMs, app developers and other parties to help keep elementary financially sustainable. So the whole point is he's going to spend time being paid to work on things that aren't just take $1,000 out of the App Store every 6 months.
I am curious, as Jono, to your point, I am curious what the large private donation was and what the parameters around there. Like, did they give up equity, or is it something that's going to potentially happen again? Or, you know, there's a lot of information they didn't include in the post, so it's hard to have a concrete opinion on a lot of that because it's just the information isn't there.
Here is the thing, and I'm kind of retailing rumor shamelessly here, so I don't know how true any of this is, so take this with a gargantuan mountain of salt. But you saw,
you know,
Gnome got $1 million as a big donation, yeah? And then just less than a week ago, they also announced they got $400,000 from Handshake.org, $300,000 for the Gnome project, $100,000 for the GIMP, right? Handshake are a decentralized certificate authority and peer-to-peer DNS service. I thought, wow, $400,000 for the Gnome Foundation, that's not bad. Now, I heard someone say, and I have no idea how true this is, and I would be interested to hear from people who could say this is not true, but I heard it wasn't $400,000 of dollars, it was $400,000 worth of cryptocurrency. I don't know if that makes a difference. I don't know if they just got it and they just went, okay, first call, Coinbase, turn it into real money, and then it's not a problem, or what. I do not know, and that could be complete bullshit. I want to be as clear about this as I possibly can be. I'm shamelessly retailing a rumor when I've got no evidence for it whatsoever.
By the way, the $1 million to the Gnome Foundation, I mean, I know who donated that, but is that public knowledge? Have they announced that?
Yeah.
They have? Okay, I just wasn't sure if they'd announced who the donation came from.
They have announced who the donation came from.
That's what I'm asking.
As far as I'm aware, they haven't announced that. No, the fact that the donation happened is public knowledge, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
God, that wasn't a secret, was it? I thought that was public. I suddenly thought, oh no, was I not meant to say they got...
I don't know. I don't know whether even the $1 million is announced. I'm just saying that, like, I know a company who has donated $1 million to the Gnome Foundation. You're obscurely looking up to see if we have to
was donated is definitely public.
Yeah, I've just Googled for Gnome $1 million. There are a million different things saying mystery donor pledges $1 million to the Gnome Foundation. So who it is has not been announced. Fine.
Okay,
but
okay.
The fact that it happened, I suddenly thought, oh, you may have some anything to do after all, Jono, if I wasn't meant to say that. I thought, that's not a secret, is it? I mean, I know a whole bunch of Gnome people are, but I'm not that plugged into their financial thing that I know about a secret $1 million donation.
The one thing I can say about the donor, by the way, without revealing the donor in any way, shape, or form, is they are... You like some companies make donations because of PR reasons or whatever, and obviously this is not for this purpose because it's a mystery donor, right? It'd be pretty shit PR if you wouldn't have your company announced.
It seems like, I'm not great at PR, as we mentioned earlier, but I feel like somewhere in the PR playbook, when you do a thing, is your name ought to be on it somewhere.
Yeah.
Just call me Max Clifford, right? It's...
This company who donated this are absolutely have the right intentions. If you knew who they were, you would not be surprised. Like, they're the kind of organization you think, yes, they're the kind of organization who would invest to a project such as Gnome.
Yeah, fascinating.
Jeremy's privately slacking me, asking who it is, you sneaky little bastard.
So we've got there two similar-ish situations, but opposite ends of the seesaw, right? Slackware attempting to put together financial sustainability, Elementary, big watch of cash. They've now got more full-time employees, so maybe they're on the trend upwards towards sustainability, or they're already there. Right? They've got full-time employees. What more do you need? So,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting, the changing fortunes.
It is, and I know we've touched on this a lot, and the recurring theme here is sustainability, right?
Yes.
Is how do you do it in a... I think from our conversation, I maybe care a bit more than I should about sustainability, and there's a certain element of just fuck it, just get on with it, make the most of it, and drive some value is another way of doing it. But I would love to figure out, I think projects such as Slackware and Elementary are a good example of the kind of projects that we haven't figured out the sustainability question in many cases.
Yeah.
And it's not that they aren't bringing enormous value to the world, because they are. So I would love to hear from the Bad Voltage community about what you think we should be doing, or what guidance you would give Slackware and Elementary about what they should do. Should we get into some more news?
Okay. Do some news which isn't about how, as an open source organization, you get money.
Right. Yeah. I'm bored of that subject now. Do you want to kick something off, Mr. L?
Well, this one, I've got a little story. Basically, a friend of mine came to me and said, "Hey, I've got a Chromebook and I'm thinking of installing Ubuntu on it. Can you give me a hand?" Because he's a bit constrained by the Chromebook, and he's been running Crouton on it, which lets you basically run Ubuntu in a window. And he's been doing that, and it's been okay, but it's quite annoying because you've got everything's running in a window, and
yeah, it's not real.
Yeah,
really,
and if you do things in the browser, then round tripping things in between the two, it doesn't seem right. It's like running half your life inside a VM. It's just irritating. And he said, "Okay, what can I do about this?" And so I said, "Well, you just like stick an Ubuntu USB stick in and install it, right?" And then I went and looked into it. Not as easy as that, it turns out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Partially this is because it's an ARM Chromebook.
Mm.
But then I just thought, but it doesn't matter, right? There's an Ubuntu.
Wasn't that a solved problem?
There's an Ubuntu ARM build, right? No, you think the same thing as I do, Bacon. It is not as easy as that. I spent an afternoon reading up on this going, wow, this is really complicated.
So, don't have that problem with Slackware, by the way.
Uh-huh. You do not. Although you'll have it installing on an ARM Chromebook, actually, I can tell you that.
You could use a zip drive to install it.
Okay. Does Slackware do USB? I'm not sure. Volkdig's like, okay, the first bit was nice, now shut up, guys. But I thought it was interesting. Obviously, a whole bunch of advice I got from people was go and buy a better laptop, which is not an unreasonable one, but...
This is not the first time you've received that advice.
And I was
going to
say,
it?
What the newer Chromebooks all just run Linux via Christini. So the answer
but he doesn't want to buy a new laptop because he's got this one and doesn't have the money at the moment to buy something else. So that's not on the card. So maybe he needs a solution for 12 months or something, but buying a new laptop is off the table. So, what are the other options? And in the end, I came down on, installing Linux is going to be really annoying for the rest of your life. It's going to be like it was, you remember back in sort of 1998 when you were digging around in text files to make the Wi-Fi work? And all this kind of thing. That's basically what it's like installing Linux on a bunch of Chromebooks.
That's really fun when you don't have a job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When you're noodling about at the age of 23 and you know your job's kind of meaningless and all your open source participation which you're doing for fun is in the evenings and going off to the pub in Wolverhampton, it's a laugh.
Yep.
But it's not actually fun. So
hours wasted,
hours and hours and hours building your own Myth TV box. So
XF86 config.
Oh, will you stop? Exactly, this is the point, right? I said you really don't want to get into this, it sounds like it's hell on legs. So I came down on eventually, people must have come up with a way of better integrating Crouton into your desktop. He kind of hadn't really looked at that because his thought has always been, I'm just running Crouton as a temporary stopgap until I install Ubuntu. Right. But I'm like, now own the fact you're using Crouton. And people must have done things which, share the clipboard between the two or make sure there's a shared file system thing or clicking on a link in your XFCE desktop opens it in the Chromos Chrome or whatever. But I'm interested in, I don't know much about this. I learned more in my afternoon of study than I knew previously by about 100 times. So I'm interested in advice from either you two. I mean, I don't think both of you have got Chromebooks, but they're sort of Pixels, right? High-end posh ones rather than the cheap ones.
I don't have one.
Oh, okay.
I've never had a Chromebook.
I thought you had the...
I've got a Pixel tablet.
We both have the Pixel C, but that runs Android.
Oh, does it? Oh, I didn't realize that. Right, man. So
I did think about buying a Chromebook, but
I've looked into it a bit before, and I thought, maybe next time I buy a laptop,
be perfect for you.
I'll buy a Chromebook. Yeah, I mean, just a pure Chromebook. I need too much actual real developer Linux stuff for it. But my thought was it'll be fine because I'll just install Ubuntu on it, and then and it turns out.
So looking out of curiosity, looking at the devices that support Christini, they go back pretty far. You're sure this device doesn't support it?
Well, it made it, but Crostini's really new. Like, at the point at which we would, I can't remember off the top of my head whether it supports it or not, but we were discussing this, and I said, well, there is a thing where it can run real Linux apps, but, you know, it had been out about, obviously it's been around sort of vaguely for a couple of years, but people actually saying, Crostini works, go ahead and use it now. Long, a very short amount of time.
I mean, it's just LXC, so it's not new technology, really.
No. Absolutely not. And it should, in theory, be fine, and maybe that's worth him looking at. But this is exactly why I'm asking the question. I'm interested to hear from people who've done this. Someone who, his use case for this is, you know, he wants to be able to do node development, for example, and have an IDE that he can use and that sort of thing. So it's not just, oh, I've got a Chromebook, but I want to run LibreOffice Writer and that's it, right? He wants to use it as a developer laptop.
Right.
And so I'm interested in thoughts from people who've done this. I mean, maybe Crostini is the answer, but I don't know whether Crostini actually supports that sort of thing, or is he going to end up just setting up a LexD thing and shelling into it the whole time?
Crostini even supports VS Code natively just for you, so.
Maybe that's the answer for him then. I don't know, I'm a Sublime guy, but if VS Code runs in it, maybe that would be okay for him. And that's why I'm asking this question. So it's to you and to the people listening.
But the thing is, I know you said it's a bit strapped for cash, but you can pick up for £130.
Not only is £130, but I'd say that's the one that I found and said maybe spend £130 on this. yeah. And that's the discussion that we had. Yes.
I mean, I just think that...
But I mean, he's not strapped for cash because he hasn't got the money. He's strapped for cash because he's saving up for a really good laptop. So this is a semi-temporary kind of a thing.
Oh, I see. You know. Okay.
So it's not like never going to have the money. It's that he doesn't want to buy a laptop and then 12 months from now buy another laptop. That seems like a waste of money, which is not an unreasonable point.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I guess it's dependent on how quickly he wants
it. Yeah, exactly. Like, but so imagine buy a new laptop is not on the table, because otherwise half people go, just buy a new laptop or buy a ThinkPad from eBay or whatever, which is a reasonable thing, but it's not really on the table for this. What technology options are there? And I'm interested in hearing from people who've done this rather than people who just Googled it like I did, because it's hard to judge what actually works and what doesn't.
I'm not sure if Jeremy and I are those people, so we might have to default to the Bad Voltage community again.
Well, this is a Seek Advice from the Community episode.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, we don't have the answers. You all do. Or some of you do. Some of you are just going to start arguing about Donald Trump, but that's okay too.
So, Jeremy, give us some news.
How about we go with... I have two pie-related news items, so why don't we stick... We'll start with Android Pie.
Two pie-related news items.
I am fully in favor of this as a brand new news policy, I have to say.
You are. The first one is, obviously, this is not really news because everyone's going to have heard that Android Pie was released on Monday. What I thought was interesting is the first phone to get the OTA was not a Pixel, but it was the Essential, which I was quite impressed with.
Which you've got, right?
I do.
How is that possible?
Given the size of Essential's team, I'm, like I said, quite impressed with it. I got the OTA update yesterday, the notification. I haven't had a chance to install it yet, but judging by online forums, Reddit, NextEA, quite a few people have, and it seems to work great. So
yeah,
kudos to the Essential team there. I am a little bit bummed that the PH2 got... I don't know whether canceled the correct word or delayed enough that it seems to be canceled, but the PH1 I think remains the best phone I've ever owned, and that's a pretty high bar because I've owned quite a few phones.
Jono, because you've got the Pixel 2, right? Is that still your current phone?
No. Dropped it in the toilet. Doesn't work.
Sake.
Yep, I've been through four Pixels. Also, I didn't have the Pixel 2. I had the original Pixel.
Oh, you never got around to buying the Pixel 2.
And I seem to remember rejecting Jeremy's opinion that you should only get a phone that is waterproof. Jeremy, you were right about this. I'm sorry. I bow to your better judgment.
You have gone through quite a few Pixels.
Three or four, something like that.
Wow, that's nuts.
A couple of them just stopped working, though, to be fair. So,
From what I've seen of Android 9, it It does seem to be reasonable. I mean, again, it's a kind of incremental thing.
So it's the first version that Treble is completely implemented on. So I think that's going to really help from the OEM's lagging perspective.
What's Treble?
So Treble is the decoupling of base Android and kind of the vendor bits, so that the layering that Essential's taken the path of kind of, we're not going to install a ton of extra stuff. They do have some features that are Essential only, but they're very few and far between. It's the stock Android skin. It's a stock Android launcher. It's 99% stock Android with a couple of little bits added on.
Which is the way to go, right?
In my opinion, yes, but Samsung disagrees, and Samsung's by far the largest Android OEM. So Android, or Google rather, kind of made Android into a layered approach where the base operating system is very easy to build on top of in a way that doesn't break, and they called that Treble. So they should be able to roll out updates much faster from an OEM perspective. It's, I think, one of Android's biggest problems to this day, and it's been well known for years and years, is that too many devices just either never receive updates or lag massively. So the, you know, Android is on 9 now, and a ton of devices still haven't gotten 8. Some devices still haven't gotten 7. So getting people updated, I think, is very high on their radar, and Treble is how they did that.
This is my phone's on 7.
Yeah,
I have a Moto G5. Yeah, this is one backup phone.
My phone's 7 as well. I haven't even got 8 yet, let alone 9. So yeah, the whole point of the Treble stuff was exactly to allow you to upgrade the core of it, so you'd get Android 9, but still keep all of your theming on top without having to basically rebuild all your theming on the new OS from the ground up, which is why you got 12 months of delays.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, good stuff. Jeremy, upgrade, and then tell us about it in the new show.
Sure.
Yes.
So you want to do the second pie? Want to do the back-to-back pie?
Yeah, what's
pie? We have previously spoke about this, and Jono, you said it would be incredulous if this was the case, and it turns out is the case. The FCC has come clean on the fact that a purported hack of its comment system last year never actually took place after a report from its inspector general found a lack of evidence supporting the idea.
So did I say that?
You did. So you remember this? This was the net neutrality thing, right? And a load of comments went in, and then their website went down, and they said, "Oh, it was hacked," and so that's why we didn't receive all of your comments. And it turns out that was all bullshit.
And the reason this is Pi related is the chairman's name is Edge of Pi. So his quote was,
"It's a loose Pi reference.
It is a very, very loose Pi reference." His comment was basically noping out of any responsibility. I am deeply disappointed that the FCC's former CIO, who was hired by the prior administration and is no longer with the commission, provided inaccurate information about this incident to me, my office, Congress, and the American people. This is completely unacceptable, and I'm also disappointed that some working under the former CIO apparently either disagreed with the information that he was presenting or had questions about it, yet didn't feel comfortable communicating their concerns to me or my office. End quote.
What a giant, smoking, steaming pile of horseshit.
That is basically, we did nothing wrong, and that other person who is no longer here, all them.
Well, the thing which is worse is, he's complaining that people didn't feel comfortable communicating their concerns to him or his office. Half of America communicated their concerns about his stupid banning net neutrality rule to him and his office, and they threw them all away and blamed it on a hacker. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah. The hell with that. Did we establish what actually happened, or did they just say there was no hack, but not what actually happened?
So the actual report, it has not been released yet. He was kind of getting out in front of this. So the report will be released tonight. I suspect it was kind of a DDoS, but not a malicious one. We were so overloaded with legitimate comments that this is a terrible idea that the system just crashed.
But that's we asked people's feedback. They gave us so much feedback it crashed the form, so we blamed it on hack.
Yes, that's the purest form of logic.
The purest form of logic, Bob. Right? People trying to tell them that getting rid of net neutrality is stupid. Wow.
Yes. Okay. Jono.
Well, I have continuing the phone theme, talking about the Google Pixel. Apparently, the Google Pixel 3 is likely going to be announced on October the 4th. There's been some kind of murmuring about this for a while because it's been October the 4th for the last 2 years.
Well, and it got printed in a British magazine accidentally.
Right. And there was some rumors that it was going to come out maybe early to kind of preempt the iPhone announcement, but it looks like it's going to be coming out on October the 4th, when it's announced. And I think Google usually ship in December, I think it is. Anyway, so in terms of the Google Pixel 3, apparently the Google Pixel is going to come in, certainly two flavors, possibly a third. There's going to be the XL and the non-XL. There's a possible third version, which is going to be more of a mid-range kind of model.
Hang on. Smaller in size or just with less stuff?
I think it's probably going to have less stuff. I don't know. They haven't confirmed this yet.
I mean, I appreciate I go on about this a lot, right? How phones are too big.
But, it's been a while. Let's hear it again.
No, that's not the point. The point is that now it's not just that phones are too big and then there's an even bigger stupid version. You said there's the XL and the non-XL. Like, the stupid, stupid one is now the standard.
Yeah. Get an essential.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But who knows? Who knows? It's all speculation. Apparently, for the XL, there's going to be a notch. Apparently, it's a deep notch, which is, I'm assuming, like a deep V. In t-shirt terms. Okay. Hey, bro, deep V. It's going to have a Snapdragon 845 if you're one of the three people in the world who cares about chips on phones. Who cares?
No, you battery-wise and feature-wise, you should care.
I mean, it's a good thing. I'm not saying it's not important, but it's not like, 486, DX2 66. apparently, it's going to have wireless charging, dual front cameras, which... there's going to be a single rear camera, which people have been saying is weird because the iPhone X comes with two cameras on the rear. But the theory is that the dual front cameras is probably going to be due to some kind of like face unlocking thing.
Because you can do a bunch of 3D depth stuff with that. But that means that, yes, it's useful for that, definitely. But it's also useful for things like portrait lighting and that sort of thing, doing interesting effects on pictures automatically in camera. Rather than post-processing. Yeah. But if it's only dual front cameras, then you can only do those things on selfies, not on taking pictures of someone else, which surprises me a bit.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, some of the thinking here has been that Google's software is so good on the camera that they only need a single rear camera.
Well, why can't they put it in all the other phones then?
Well, yeah, I don't know. One thing I actually quite like, people have been going on and on about like bezels and getting rid of bezels, but there's a bit of a chin on the rumored kind of format for this, but that's because the speaker's on the front of the phone. And this is something we should be sponsoring and supporting. This is a good thing, people. Don't put speakers on the bottom of the phone or the side of the phone. Because if you do watch videos on your phone, I think a lot of people do from time to time, then having decent speakers is worth it. And apparently it's going to come with Android 9, which is unsurprising. But apparently, there's going to be a Pixel stand, which is a thing that goes next to your bed, and then when you put the phone into it, it basically effectively turns it into kind of a Google Home type thing, which I think is quite a cool idea. If it's got wireless charging, you plonk it in there, and then you can do the...
That's fair. I was thinking, why don't you just have like a folded piece of card? But if it turns it into a Google Home, then fine.
Something along those lines. And if you don't want a Pixel 3, then apparently there's going to be a Palm phone.
I know. The zombie corpse of Palm lurches forward into the market once again. Someone else step up and take a swing at the corpse. Let's give it a go.
It's got a just a classically, witty, catchy name. It's a PVG 100, which sounds like a radio controlled car from the 80s. Apparently, Palm was bought by TCL, who are the company makes those crap TVs at Costco, in 2014, and they're going to be kicking out this phone. I did see a picture, but I'm not sure if it was a mock-up or it was real.
Before you go on, TCL, they haven't just bought Palm, they bought BlackBerry.
They did? And, TCL did? How did I miss that?
Yeah, they purchased the...
Is it because nobody cares about BlackBerry's?
They purchased the global rights for BlackBerry, right? The global rights to the BlackBerry brand.
What rights?
No, but the point is that apparently the brand has done really well since they bought it. I had no idea. I don't know where it's done really well, somewhere other than where I am, presumably. But nonetheless, apparently it has.
It maybe for, I don't know, didn't they have some focus on like security, like government phones and stuff like that? I seem to remember from a while back.
I mean, BES did way back in the day, but
I don't know. But I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this Palm thing, because, you know, talking about, you know, the nostalgia around Slackware, I think, I don't know about you, Jeremy, but I know Langridge and I definitely have a lot of nostalgia when it comes to Palm.
Oh, yes. Trio. My Trio was one of my favorite phones.
I would say I'd like my Palm 3X back, and that would be fine. But actually, my dad dug my Palm 3X out of a box about 12 months ago, and I went, oh, wow, Palm 3X, they tried it out, and went, wow, this is rubbish. I can't believe how rubbish this was. I thought it was cool when it came out.
I thought all LG devices were now WebOS.
Now, yes, that's the thing. LG smart TVs are all WebOS. So that still lives on, but I don't think...
It's rubbish.
But no, I mean, I don't think if you're buying Palm off HP, I don't think it gives you that. Didn't they kick that out separately? I don't actually know this.
Don't know.
But, I don't know. I also don't know.
But I think, because the new, the alleged new Palm, the PVG-100, snappily named as it was, so I had to look it up again, it's going to be running Android.
Oh, yeah, so no, they did spin it out separately.
Yeah, so WebOS is running on LG TVs, but that's not what TCL have bought. They've bought the Palm brand, but I think this might be like they bought the BlackBerry brand. They're going to put out an Android phone with Palm logo on it.
Hmm. But I don't understand the point of that. Like, you know, Palm is a pretty antiquated brand, right? It's from a long time ago. A
lot of nostalgia there.
And, you know, so people who buy that are going to be expecting something like I would imagine they're going to be expecting some of the same feel and approach and design or whatever it might be. Something reminiscent of why Palm was interesting or why BlackBerry's were interesting. Now, it could be hardware keyboards on the phone. That might be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Certainly, I think people have Palm nostalgia, but I don't think they have nostalgia for just anything with the word Palm written on. I think it's because Palm always took a sort of slightly sideways approach to things, so it felt slightly unique, slightly different, slightly iconoclastic. And this is not the case if you just ship a phone running Android 8.1. Note, don't know whether it'll be 9 by the time it comes out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Palm. An ancient African word meaning I can't afford a compact iPad. I always wanted an iPad, never got one.
No, never had one.
I had a Sharp Zaurus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those were cool. I got the developer version of that before.
They were cool, with the little slide down thing with the keyboard on it and everything.
This is writing cute apps.
Yeah, that
quite
was
a nostalgic show here.
That was a sweet device. I really liked that.
I remember when it was all fields around here.
It was. It were all fields.
It were all fields. what else have we got?
Well, I've got one other thing in a kind of shaking my head sort of way. Apparently, West Virginia are, for the midterm elections in the US, are going to introduce mobile phone voting and a blockchain. And obviously, everyone has explained to them this is a terrible idea, getting in a startup called Votes, VOATZ. So I suppose it should be great.
VOATZ. Isn't that that Reddit knockoff?
that's without the Z.
That's Vote. Oh. I was just grateful it's not called Vote.
So I like that if you Google Votes, the very first return on Google is a horrifically bad idea.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. Obviously, everyone has leapt to explain why this is a terrible idea. So we probably don't need to do that again, but yeah.
Is this just an attempt at trying to sound techie? Are they going to have an initial coin offering as part of this?
Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. For goodness
instead
sake.
Of an ICO, it's going to be an IVO, initial vote offering.
lot of Russians going to be invested in that.
Oh goodness! Yes. So that was
the second result is the Theranos of voting. This is not a popular idea here.
That's
people are fans.
I'm gonna have to read up on this. This one I wasn't familiar with.
I have one final one, and we should probably wrap it up soon because we've been going for a while.
We have.
There's rumors abound that apparently this is more hardware news. Apple are apparently, they file all kinds of patents, right? And they filed a patent about replacing the keyboard on a MacBook with a touch bar style interface. You know, so the MacBook touch bar thing is basically a mini OLED display where it displays different buttons depending on what apps you're in. The idea of replacing the whole thing with that. Now, I know Apple have come under some heat because their butterfly keyboards didn't really work very well, and people would get biscuit crumbs in there and they'd stop working. And then they refreshed the MacBook line and they seem to have fixed that problem. But this is interesting for two reasons to me. One is that we've talked before, I think, on this show, but we certainly talked a little about this in Lug Radio, about the importance of tactile feedback.
Yes.
In keyboards.
Yes. Like,
that's why, you know, just tapping a screen is weird.
Yes.
So I don't believe for a second Apple would just stick a screen on with a keyboard on it. They'd have to solve that
it
problem.
It does seem a bit extreme to see everyone buying a new MacBook and then complaining about the keyboard on Twitter and going, let's just get rid of the keyboard and replace it with a television. That'll shut them all up.
it is a kill it with fire approach to the problem.
It is. It's bold.
But I'm assuming they're going to come up with some form of solution to the tactile issue. But it also reminds me, do you remember that Onion video of the MacBook wheel? Did you ever see that?
No.
So you know the Onion?
Yes.
The satirical news source. They, for a while, I don't know if they still do this, but they used to have this kind of video show. It was like a really professionally produced mock news show, you know, with news anchors. And they were talking about how Apple's newest innovation was the MacBook wheel. And it's just like one of the iPod wheels just taking up the entire space of a MacBook. It's pretty hilarious. So, you know, it's almost like, once again, the Onion starts becoming real.
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't read the Onion for a while, because if I want to read news stories that I can't believe are just satirical and ridiculous, I'll just read the Washington Post these days.
So, just read the news.
There are a bunch of people talking about this and trying to explain why, no, this will actually be a total success, and I don't know what you're all worried about. And citing things like 3D touch, and they've got, they talk about Apple's Taptic Engine, which iPhones have got. So you get direct feedback in terms of little taps and vibrations and so on, but it's not the same as a keyboard. I mean, and I'm pretty easy to please with keyboards. There are a whole bunch of people out there saying, oh, well, you couldn't possibly have a keyboard unless you spent £450 on it and each of the switches is individually handcrafted or something. But I'm just like, no, a keyboard that costs a tenner is fine from my point of view.
Yeah, I'll get used to it.
But you still can't type on this other thing. I saw years and years and years ago, I'm pretty sure it was Nokia, were working on a screen which actually bulged up into the shape of a button. A touch screen, but it was made of some kind of flexible material, so it could actually bulge up into a button like a keyboard, and then you could type on it. So essentially, instead of attempting to mimic the look of a keyboard and the feel of a keyboard by doing little vibrations and haptic stuff and 3D touch, you just have something which is essentially just turns into a Spectrum keyboard when you push a button. It's
a lumpy keyboard.
Yeah.
That's what we need, Spectrum keyboard with little screens on it.
It's
rubber keys.
Intriguing. So, colour me Mr. Skeptic about this particular thing, to be honest with you.
What would Steve Jobs think? I do have one final piece of personal news, which I do want to share. So I was late to the game when it came to Game of Thrones. I was late to the game when it came to watching Lost. I was late to the game when it came to Dexter. There's a trend here.
There is.
I recently just discovered Public Enemy.
The band.
I'm sorry, I know you're a big Chuck D fan, but I didn't even realize the flavors in Public Enemy. I'm serious. Last night I discovered Public Enemy. And I've been...
So when I used to go on at you to say, when you'd say, okay, who should we invite to Lug Radio Live to be the speaker?
I would
always say Chuck D every year. We mailed him a couple of times, never heard back, right? Hey, Chuck D, come to Wolverhampton and talk to like 200 people. Never really bought into it. Who did you think I was talking about?
I assumed it was a DJ from Cypress Hill.
No.
Wow.
I appreciate this, the error of my judgment.
I have a somewhat funny, fairly quick PE story, actually. So yeah. I was on a Southwest flight years ago now with Chuck, Flava Flav. And ended up, because it's random seating, sat directly next to him. And he's actually more down. I was expecting like, yeah, boy, had a pretty rational conversation. Our flight got delayed and everyone was freaking out. And he was like the most calm person about it.
And he's like, no, but we've got loads of time. Don't worry about it. Believe me, I know.
This is going to be an awesome conversation. And old ladies, older people kept coming up to him being like, hey, Flava Flav. I was like, I got to be honest with you. I don't understand how all these people know, but I just wouldn't have thought that was a demographic that was listening to PE. He had a reality show that I didn't know about at all that was super popular. Everybody on the plane knew him. It was hilarious.
This is Flava Flav in the house or whatever it was. Is it that thing? Because there was a thing where didn't he have sex with the giant woman from Rocky 2 in a hot tub?
I still have never seen it. It just amused me that a bunch of 80-year-olds knew who Flava Flav was. Well, it was awesome.
I now don't care about your story. I want to hear about this hot tub thing. Are you sure you did? Didn't just dream that, was it, right?
Hang on, what's that? Bridget Nielsen? That's not the guy from Naked Gun, is it?
That's Leslie Nielsen. Come with us, listeners, as we go through
reality. It was called Flavor of Love.
Flavor of Love, yeah.
Wow.
I think he had something happened with him and that beastly woman, Bridget, what's the name, in a hot tub, something like that. I mean, she's like 8 feet tall and made out of marble, if it's the woman I'm thinking of. And there was something happened in a hot
tub. Wait, they had a show together. I didn't know about any of this. The surreal life.
They went out, apparently. She guest starred on Flavor of Love. Flav tells... Oh, for goodness sake. I just went to People magazine, and what did I see? A great big thing saying, oh, you're in the EU. Click this button. So I'll just have to read it from the Google summary. Flavor Flav tells People how ex-girlfriend Bridget Nielsen's pregnancy at 54... shows everybody in the world that everything and anything is, and then the little snippet runs out. So I don't know what everything and anything is.
Listeners, fill in the rest of that sentence.
Like complete the following sentence. But wow.
So there is one huge question that we all want to ask you, Jeremy, about this encounter with Flava Flav. Was he wearing a clock around his neck?
No clock, no Viking horn hat, no anything that you would... Like I said, it was... So he was on the phone beforehand, too. It was pretty funny. It was the year the Giants won the Super Bowl. And he's like, yo, you got to get me on that float, son. The conversations that he was having were amazing. So half the time I talked to him about him getting on the float. So I kind of am curious if he got on the float, but I didn't follow up with him later. So I don't know. But it was an amusing few hours, I will say.
When you struck up the conversation, did you say, hi, my name's Jeremy from LinuxQuestions.org?
I did not.
Say, hi, I'm Flava Flav?
He did have a Public Enemy coat on, which I thought was kind of hilarious.
Wow. So yeah, I just started my Public Enemy journey last night.
Well, start with Nation of Millions.
Okay.
Did you listen to it on your iRiver?
That was downright unkind, Jeremy, because here's what that was.
A little bit harsh, right?
What do we think, Jezza?
In Og.
Nation of Millions to start? Where should he start?
All their old stuff is so good.
I know.
Well, I can tell you what I've been... Oh, no, it's... Hang on. Oh, no, I've lost it. Where is it? Oh.
So I'm curious in 2008... how you first came upon Public Enemy.
It was last night. I was doing some work and happened to be listening to Anthrax, and they did a cover of Bring the Noise with Public Enemy, which I'd always heard before. And then I watched that video, and it was the first time I really paid attention, and I thought, is that Flava Flav? because I'd heard about him. And then I was like, oh, he's in Public Enemy. Or Anthrax. Probably Public Enemy.
That's...
And then, wow. And then typed in, you know, Public Enemy live, because I always like to check out live gigs when I find a new band, and found this really cool show of them playing in Germany somewhere, like 5 years ago, something like that. And it was pretty cool. And I just found myself really digging it, and then just fired up Spotify and started at the top and worked my way down.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Start with Nation of Millions.
Yeah. So, you know about Prophets of Rage, right?
I do, but I discovered them like a year and a half ago.
Wow. This is okay.
I don't claim to be perfect, guys.
I saw them a couple years ago. They were good.
I grant you that you are late to the party on a bunch of stuff, but discovering Terminator X, The Edge of Panic now is something that surprised me a little bit. Where I should be this evening on the subject of music is watching Iron Maiden play in Birmingham. But I didn't go.
Why?
Why? Don't say it's because we're recording, because we could have changed.
No. Just basically didn't get around to it. And it's at the NEC the Genting Arena. So it would have been a faff to get there and so on. But yeah, mainly just didn't go.
But yeah, the Genting Arena?
That's what it's called now. Yeah, the NEC.
Is it spelled D-J-E-N-T?
No.
Like Degent, no. Like the style of metal?
No. Genting is some kind of company who own like hotels and stuff. It's not interesting.
You're missing out, man. Legacy of the Beast.
Yeah, I know.
They're gonna have one more in the room. Yeah,
but yeah. You know.
I'm not going to see them on the Legacy of the Beast tour because they're not playing in the US on this.
Are
tour.
They? Oh, unlucky.
No. Yeah.
Anyway.
So, anyway, I think we're done.
We are done.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to our 1 hour long stream of random consciousness. We've asked you many questions. Go and let us know what you think about, you know, sustainability in projects. Let us know about the barbecue pad licensing. If you're interested in building a barbecue community.
What to do on Chromebooks.
What to do on the Chromebook, the Chromebook conundrum.
If you've got any more pie-related stories, always happy to hear those.
Yeah, I'd like to... Maybe we can have a topic on the forum with pie-related stories and news.
Right.
When people type in pie news, it goes to the Bad Voltage forum. All right. Later, skaters.